Welcome to episode 2 of Other Voices, Other Choices. I'm Wilton Vaught, host of the series. This episode is Inaugurate the Resistance, an event held in Washington, D.C. on January 21st, 2017, one day after the inauguration of Donald Trump. The event was part of Occupy Inauguration's Weekend of Resistance, sponsored by the Green Party, Socialist Alternative, Occupy Wall Street, Movement for the 99%, and the Stein-Baraka campaign. You can find a video of this event at othervoicesotherchoices.com and at the YouTube channel of the same name. We start with a speech by Chris Hedges, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who writes a weekly column for truthdig.com.
The ruling elites, terrified by the mobilization of the left in the 1960s, or by what Samuel Huntington called America's excess of democracy, built counter-institutions to delegitimize and marginalize critics of corporate capitalism and imperialism. They bought the allegiances of the two main political parties. They imposed ideological obedience to the neoliberal agenda within academia and the press. This campaign, laid out by Lewis Powell in his 1971 memorandum, Attack on American Free Enterprise System, was the blueprint for the creeping corporate coup d'etat that 45 years later is complete. The destruction of democratic institutions, places where the citizen has agency and a voice, is far graver than the ascendancy to the White House of the demagogue Donald Trump. The coup destroyed our two-party system. It destroyed labor unions. It destroyed public education. It destroyed the judiciary. It destroyed the press. It destroyed academia. It destroyed consumer and environmental protection. It destroyed our industrial base. It destroyed communities and cities. And it has destroyed the lives of tens of millions of Americans, no longer able to find work that provides a living wage, cursed to live in chronic poverty, or locked in cages in our monstrous system of mass incarceration. This coup has also destroyed the credibility of liberal democracy. Self-identified liberals such as the Clintons or Barack Obama mouthed the words of liberal democratic values while making war on those values in the service of corporate power. The revolt we see rippling across the country is a revolt not only against a corporate system that has betrayed workers, but also for many, liberal democracy itself. This is very dangerous. It will allow the radical right under a Trump administration to rapidly cement into place an Americanized fascism. Ignorance allied with power, James Baldwin wrote, is the most ferocious enemy justice can have. It turns out 45 years later that those who truly hate us for our freedoms are not the array of dehumanized enemies cooked up by the war machine, the Vietnamese, Cambodians, Afghans, Iraqis, Iranians, or even the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, and ISIS. They are the financiers, bankers, politicians, public intellectuals and pundits, lawyers, journalists, and business people, cultivated in the elite universities and business schools, who sold us the utopian dream of neoliberalism. We are entering the twilight phase of capitalism. Wealth is no longer created by producing or manufacturing. It is created by manipulating the prices of stocks and commodities and imposing a crippling debt peonage on the public. Our casino capitalism has merged with the gambling industry. The entire system is parasitic. It is designed to prey on the desperate, students burdened by loans, underpaid workers burdened by credit card debt and mortgages, towns and cities forced to borrow to maintain municipal services. Casino magnates such as Sheldon Adelson and hedge fund managers such as Robert Mercer add nothing of value to society. They do not generate money, but redistribute it upwards to the 1%. They use lobbyists and campaign contributions to build monopolies. This is how the drug company Mylan raised the price of the EpiPen used to treat allergy reactions from $57 in 2007 to $500. To rewrite the laws and regulations, they have given themselves the legal power to carry out a tax boycott, loot the US Treasury, close factories, send jobs overseas, gut social service programs, and impose austerity. They have at the same time militarized our police, built the most sophisticated security and surveillance apparatus in human history, and taken from us our civil liberties by judicial fiat. They are ready, should we rise up in defiance. These mandarins are, if we speak in the language of God and country, traitors. They are parasites. Financial speculation in 17th century England was a crime. Speculators were hanged. The heads of most of the banks and hedge funds, the executives of large corporations such as Walmart and Gap that run sweatshop death traps for impoverished workers overseas, deserve prison far more than most of the poor students of color who never had a fair chance in life and who I teach within our prison system. When a tiny cabal seizes power, monarchist, communist, fascist, or corporate, it creates a mafia economy and a mafia state. Donald Trump is not an anomaly. He is the grotesque visage of a collapsed democracy. Trump and his coterie of billionaires, generals, half-wits, Christian fascists, criminals, racists, and deviants play the role of William Faulkner's Snopes clan. The Snopeses, in Faulkner's novels, ruthlessly seized control from the degenerated former slave-holding aristocratic elites. Flem Snopes and his extended family, which included a killer, a pedophile, a bigamist, an arsonist, a mentally disabled man who copulates with a cow, and a relative who sells tickets to witness the bestiality, are fictional representations of the scum now elevated to the highest level of the federal government. They embody the moral rot unleashed by decay and unfettered capitalism. The usual reference to amorality, while accurate, is not sufficiently distinctive and by itself does not allow us to place them, as they should be placed, in a historical moment, the critic Irving Howe wrote of the Snopeses. Perhaps the most important thing to be said is that they are what comes afterwards, the creatures that emerge from the devastation with the slime still upon their lips. Let a world collapse in the South or Russia, and there appear figures of coarse ambition, driving their way up from beneath the social bottom, men to whom moral claims are not so much as absurd as incomprehensible, sons of bushwhackers and musics drifting in from nowhere and taking over through the sheer outrageousness of their monolithic force. They become presidents of local banks and chairman of party regional committees, and later, a trifle slicked up, they muscle their way into Congress or the Politburo. Scavengers without inhibition. They need not believe in the crumbling official code of their society. They need only learn to mimic its sounds. What comes next, history has shown, will not be pleasant. A corrupt and inept ruling elite, backed by the organs of state security and law enforcement, will unleash a naked kleptocracy. Workers will become serfs. The most benign dissent will be criminalized. The ravaging of the ecosystem will propel us towards extinction. Hate talk will call for attacks against Muslims, undocumented workers, African Americans, feminists, intellectuals, artists, dissidents, who will be scapegoated for the country's stagnation. Magical thinking will dominate our airwaves and be taught in our public schools. Art and culture will be degraded to nationalist quiche. All the cultural and intellectual disciplines that allow us to view the world from the perspective of the other, that foster empathy, understanding, and compassion, will be replaced by a grotesque and cruel hyper-masculinity and hyper-militarism. Racism, bigotry, misogyny, and homophobia will be validated by those in power. Our only hope now is an unwavering non-cooperation with the systems of corporate control. We must rebuild new democratic institutions from the ground up. We must not be seduced into trusting the power elites, including the Democratic Party, with 7 leading candidates to be the next chair of the Democratic National Committee demonstrated the other night at George Washington University that they have no interest in defying corporate power or backing democratic populism. And we must also acknowledge our own failures on the left, our elitism, arrogance, and refusal to root our politics in local communities. Rosa Luxemburg understood that unless we first address the most pressing economic and physical needs of the destitute, we will never gain credibility or build a resistance movement. Revolt, she said, is achieved only by establishing genuine relationships with the oppressed, including with people who do not think like us. Successful revolt surges up from below. Politics is a game of fear. Those who do not make power elites afraid do not succeed. All the movements that opened up the democratic space in America, the abolitionists, suffragists, communists, socialists, anarchists, and the labor and civil rights movements, developed a critical mass and militancy that forced the centers of power to respond. Platitudes about justice, equality, and democracy are just that. Only when power is threatened does it react. Appealing to its better nature is useless. It doesn't have one. We once had within our capitalist democracy liberal institutions, the press, labor unions, third parties, civic and church groups, public broadcasting, well-funded public universities, and a liberal wing of the Democratic Party that were capable of responding to outside pressure from movements. They did so imperfectly. They provided only enough reforms to save the capitalist system from widespread unrest or with the breakdown of capitalism in the 1930s from revolution. They never addressed white supremacy and institutional racism or the cruelty that is endemic to capitalism. But they had the ability to ameliorate the suffering of working men and women. This safety valve no longer works, and when reform becomes impossible, revolution becomes inevitable. The days ahead will be dark and frightening. But as Immanuel Kant reminded us, if justice perishes, human life on earth has lost its meaning. We fight for life. It is a fight we must not lose. To be a bystander is to be complicit in radical evil. Revolt is a political necessity. It is a moral imperative. It is a defense of the sacred, and it alone makes hope possible. The moment we defy power, we are victorious. The moment we stand alongside the oppressed and accept being treated like the oppressed, we are victorious. The moment we hold up a flickering light in the darkness for others to see, we are victorious. The moment we thwart the building of a pipeline or a fracking site, we are victorious. And the moment those in power become frightened of us, we are victorious. I do not know if we can build a better society. I do not even know if we will survive as a species. But I know these corporate forces have us by the throat, and they have my children by the throat. I do not fight fascists because I will win. I fight fascists because they are fascists. Thank you.
You're listening to Inaugurate the Resistance on Other Voices, Other Choices. That was Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Chris Hedges. Next up is Seattle City Council member Shama Sawant of Socialist Alternative.
Sisters and brothers, Donald Trump is now predator-in-chief and head of one of the most dangerous and right-wing administrations in U.S. history. In his inauguration speech, Trump said that his government will follow the righteous path, that it will be a government for the people, that the forgotten men and women will be forgotten no more, that he will create good jobs for all, and he said great schools. But of course, as we know, Trump is a disgusting multi-billionaire liar and con man. He has built his administration on the worst muck of the billionaire class, right-wing bigotry, and corporate elite. And there is absolutely no mandate for Trump's hateful, bigoted, misogynist agenda. He is arriving at the White House with the lowest approval rating before inauguration, and those approval numbers are plummeting by the hour. But opinion polls alone will not be sufficient to stop him. Trump and the billionaire class understand one thing only: power. That is why our task this weekend and going forward has to be to build social power from below to counter the billionaires. But to answer the wide range of vicious attacks that will be coming at us from Trump's administration will require building a determined fighting movement, a movement that seeks to mobilize millions from below into collective struggle, building grassroots democratic structures and our own independent organizations. Socialist Alternative has shown an example of this. The day after elections, when many were paralyzed with despair, we called for protest rallies in many cities around the country, including Seattle, Boston, New York, Philadelphia, and we mobilized 50,000 people onto the streets. But going forward, sisters and brothers, merely protest will not be enough. We are going to be required to organize mass nonviolent civil disobedience. Marches of tens of thousands of people can shut down highways and find other ways to shut down business as usual. To inspire huge numbers into action, we need fighting demands that point to an alternative vision of society, a vision that puts people and the environment above the profit-driven agenda of big business. Of course, we will need to begin by mobilizing around defeating the litany of attacks that will come from Trump and the Republicans, from defending the gains that were won through the Affordable Care Act to defending public schools. But this defense needs to be linked to putting forward audacious demands that can inspire with a promise of a dramatic improvement in people's lives, especially something for the millennial generation. We are going to have to fight for Medicare for all. $15 an hour for all workers in America. Full funding for public schools and free higher education by taxing Wall Street greed. And because Black Lives Matter, putting an end to police brutality and the racist mass incarceration state. We all heard some of this in the election year last year. Bernie's bold program around these demands inspired enthusiasm from millions, while Hillary's timid, corporate-friendly proposals of tinkering around the edges failed to mobilize them. And this weekend needs to be our starting point. Let's make March 8th, which is International Women's Day, a day of defiance against Trump and misogyny and sexism. Let's make it a day of protest to defend Planned Parenthood and against all forms of sexual violence. May 1st is International Workers' Day and a day for immigrant rights protests. Our target this May 1st should be to bring millions onto the streets in a truly massive wave of demonstrations for immigrant rights and against racism. And we have to be there, all races, all national origins, shoulder to shoulder, because an injury to one is an injury to all. And to build these struggles successfully, we will need the broadest possible unity in action of all forces that are prepared to seriously fight against Trump and his billionaires. This will mean unions, immigrant rights organizations, women's rights organizations, civil rights, LGBTQ, environmental rights organizations, all activists, Sanders supporters, progressive Democrats, and socialists and Greens coming together around these concrete demands. But, sisters and brothers, there is no avoiding that there are major political differences of strategy and social interests in this movement. In my view, and in the view of Socialist Alternative, my organization, our movement needs to base itself on the needs of the struggle against Trump and the billionaire class. We cannot let it be restricted by the limits of what the corporate leadership of the Democratic Party will allow. We cannot make a false equivalence between the Democrats and Republicans. There are differences. At the same time, the Democrats in Congress will now be put to the test in terms of their willingness to stand firm against Trump. Because let's remember, when Obama became president in 2009, the Democrats had 60 seats in the Senate and a large majority in the House, and yet the Republicans succeeded in relentlessly fighting Obama, blocking much of his agenda. Yeah. The question now is, will the Democratic Party politicians be willing to similarly, relentlessly obstruct Trump's agenda, especially with the Republicans having only a razor-slim majority of 52 seats in the Senate? For example, concretely speaking, Trump has promised that he will nominate an ideologue, a zealot for the Supreme Court justice, somebody who will go after abortion rights. But he will not be able to do that if congressional Democrats stand firm and filibuster him. Will they? I think we have to recognize that there's an honest debate about what the role of the Democratic Party will be in the coming months. Unfortunately, in our view, recent experience does not inspire confidence in the Democratic Party, especially in the pro-capitalist politicians who dominate the party. I commend the stance of those congressional Democrats who refused to attend Trump's swearing-in today, yesterday. But we also need to recognize that the majority of their Democratic colleagues refused to do so, instead shamefully attending. The most outrageous recently was what Tim mentioned, which is the recent decision by 13 Democrats to join Republicans in siding with Big Pharma against ordinary working people. Two of those 13 Democrats are the Democratic senators from my state, Washington State, Patty Murray and Maria Cantwell. As a socialist, I do not think that the Democratic Party is offering the kind of combative working class or movement-based leadership that will be necessary, that will be critical to confront a ruthless foe like Trump. We need our own political party. We need a new political party that rejects all corporate donations and instead bases itself on the funding and active support of working people and progressive organizations, a party that runs anti-corporate candidates all over the US. But we have to remember, we are not going to be successful in building an alternative to the Democrats and Republicans unless we recognize that most of the mass of working people out there, most of the 500,000 people who march today, do not necessarily see it that way. There are many people who are angry and frustrated, but do not necessarily translate that anger and frustration into a clear analysis that, yes, now that means we need a new party for the 99%. We have to be honest in recognizing that many genuine activists will try the tactic of trying to take back the Democratic Party following the lead of Bernie Sanders and our revolution. They will be doing that. I think our approach should be, the movement's approach should be to work together all around concrete fighting demands to build the largest struggle on the streets while continuing to have an honest and open debate about strategy. Chris talked about the times we live in. These are trying times. But in these trying times, I am given tremendous hope by the newfound spirit of rebellion amongst young people. Look at the Black Lives Matter movement. Look at the campus movement against sexual violence. Look at the environmental movement. We have these movements being led by young people, by millennials. And most significant in all of this is the growing support for socialism, with thousands of young people joining socialist organizations. And the reason why is no mystery. They recognize that capitalism has failed them. And Donald Trump is a particularly repulsive expression of the predatory nature of the capitalist system itself. We found out just this week that eight people, own more wealth than half of the world's population. That is, 3.5 billion people at the bottom have less than 8 multi-billionaires. We also found out, as Jill mentioned, that global temperatures for the third year in a row have broken all previous records. Sisters and brothers, we need a radically different society. We need socialism. Yeah. Socialism means a society where the major corporations are taken into public ownership so we can democratically plan how to use society's resources to meet human need rather than private profit. An egalitarian society rather than the dog-eat-dog bloody competition of capitalism. A society based on international cooperation rather than the vile nationalism that Trump is promoting. Sisters and brothers, another world is possible, but we will need to fight for it. I hope that we can all join in fighting for a socialist future, because there is absolutely no time to lose. Thank you.
This is Other Voices, Other Choices, with coverage of the Inaugurate the Resistance event held in Washington, D.C. on January 21st, 2017. You just heard Seattle City Council member Shama Sawant. Next up is Native American activist Chase Iron Eyes, whose website is lastrealindians.com.
This is an amazing event, amazing energy. I know that everybody who's made their way here is not a passive observer of the crisis that we find ourselves in. I know that you all have leadership capabilities. You all have your own networks. You came here to see what's next, to see how we respond to what appears to be a very real, some would say already complete, hijacking and takeover of our very democracy by the forces and institutions manifested by the corporate state. For our people, that's over the last 500 years. For everybody else, the last couple thousand years. It's very important to note that colonization isn't about white people colonizing brown and black people, although there are aspects of that in our truthful recollection of history. But the colonization we talk about is the one that applies to all of us, the one that separated our spirits from our minds, the one that separated our meaning from our labor, indeed separated human beings from their food sources, from their sacred relationships with the lands, with the waters, with the sites, with the sacred beings of the universe. Every one of you in this room descend from original, free, and independent peoples and nations who are designed to respect those sacred relationships. Never forget that, because that's the fight that we find ourselves in right now in Standing Rock. I recently ran for United States Congress. I was defeated by a Trump surrogate, and immediately following my defeat, I joined the resistance at the front lines. That's how our organization came to supply about 70% of all logistics and humanitarian aid to the camp. To this day, thank you. And we were only able to do that because of the generosity of everybody out there who donates, who really gives from their heart, from a place of compassion, because they know our struggle for clean water is righteous. When we talk about the privatization of water, it's a very real thing. Water is a basic human right. Not only is, that's right. Not only is water sacred, but water is the foundation of all real economic value globally. So to this day, there have been about 600 arrests in North Dakota of people who have made the decision to sacrifice their liberty, their lives even, and their limbs in pursuit of liberty, freedom, justice, and equality. Not only is that struggle about a people's right to clean water, but that struggle is about the very sanctity of the American Constitution and whether or not we still have the right to speak freely, the right to peaceably assemble. Right now, the Army Corps of Engineers is trying to prescribe what they call free speech zones. That's right. Well, we've got news for them. The entire country is a free speech zone. So that struggle will continue, and we will win, but it's going to get even more serious with a Trump presidency. And that's why we all came, because we feel a sense of urgency. Everything that happens, every time we as human beings attempt to transcend the oppression of our spiritual nature. We are following the inspiration of the powers of creation. And we need to name this because they would have you think that we should be divided by race, color, creed, sex, gender, any other kind of synthetic classification. But when you take a look at it, our enemies, if we can call it that, if we can name the set of institutions that is going to be represented by a Trump presidency and a Republican-controlled Congress, it is too big to fail finance. It's too big to fail extraction. It is big pharma. It is a corporatocracy, a set of institutions of law, of economics, of politics, of media, of education. It is the house of cards that is propped up. It's the set of values, the very advertising industry that shoots 3,000 images at you and your children every single day, telling you what's cool, what's appropriate in this society, telling us what to buy, what to consume, and indeed controlling the environment within which we have to trade our labor to procure some of those human necessities. I know you all feel this. It's just a matter of diagnosing it and appreciating it and looking it in the eye and being able to transcend it and really to unite. That's what's going to happen under a Trump regime. We are not under Trump's regime. This is still our country. And right now we have to make a determination to be courageous rather than fearful. When we take a look at all the demographics which Trump has publicly indicated that he would antagonize, that includes everybody in the Occupy movement, everybody who descended from the Battle of Seattle, everybody in labor, everybody who stood up for a $15 minimum wage, everybody in the feminist movement, and everybody give all the women who organized today's historic and monumental march a round of applause, please. Because truly, we have to do our part. I don't understand feminism the way a woman would understand feminism, but I know that the deconstruction of Western heteropatriarchy and all of its symptoms of objectification, misogyny, the sexualization of women, I've had to think very strongly about these things since I have daughters. And I am on a path of liberation in that respect. So I don't pretend to know everything about that, but I know that I have to be aware of it and I have to support it. We're all at risk, and unless we come together, we will fail. Because the enemy is well capitalized, they control all means of the flow of information from mainstream media to education, to what gets attention, and every movement that we've named, including Occupy, including Black Lives Matter, maybe even including the Standing Rock No Dapple struggle, is at risk, is constantly at risk of being subsumed by those forces, that logic of capital, that set of institutions that creates currency out of thin air now. That set of institutions that is abstracting the human being from its relationships with the natural universe, that is the enemy, if we were to name the enemy. And that enemy is a couple thousand years in the making. It's not easily defeated. But at every turn, it's our natural inclination, our spiritual duty, to stand up to that oppressive regime that is at work around the globe, oppressing not only every human, but every living being, commodifying every resource that our ancient worldviews saw as living, breathing relatives. That is the strength of what we are up against. But I know we have to believe that we are capable. We have to believe that we can rise with the sun and feel its love, feel the embrace of the winds, listen to the songs of the birds, see the movements of the stars, and reunite your spirit with our natural surroundings. This is the challenge that Native nations have had. We have provided the spiritual foundation for what is going to be the economic and political liberation of America. That's our role. We take that role very, very seriously. We have an entire set of cosmologies. We civilized this whole hemisphere. 10 to 20,000 years, nobody knows how long our civilizations have been here. But what we know is that we have not been appreciated. But that's changing. The whole world is changing. And right now, we have to build bridges. We can't build walls. We can't see each other as different. We need to respect our differences, but we can't see ourselves as being able to exist in these vacuums anymore. We have to unite all of our struggles. We do not have time. That's why out there at Standing Rock, there are 500 people ready to be arrested. There are people who understand that we all have to take a leadership role in the unarmed and non-violent. And what I mean by that is we cannot be the initiators of aggressive violence. If we stick to these principles, I believe that we can have a revolution. And we need that in our country right now, because the corporate state inflicts violence around the world. The corporate state indeed has inflicted violence and expropriated and dehumanized and objectified and commodified an entire globe. That regime, that corporate state, knows exactly what to do with people who arm themselves, people who are violent, people who seek out violent means to assert their concerns. You end up dead or in jail. That's what happens to our movement if we go there. But we need to understand that peace, when we're peaceful, it's not passive. The power of peace is not passive at all. The power of peace doesn't back down in the face of rubber bullets, less lethal bullets, mace, drones, helicopters, fixed-wing aircraft, dog attacks, corporate mercenaries, a collusion between law enforcement, the National Guard, the governor, the legislators, the media. All those sets of institutions are colluding with each other. Those same forces are going to be at work against your constitutional rights, your civil rights, your human rights. Unless we wake up and stay woke, stay vigilant, because the very fate and fabric of our democratic reality is at stake right now. And we have made that determination to stand up and to never back down, because our children's future literally depends on it. Now, in the face of all that violence, the power of peace tells us to stand in our own spiritual dignity and to not back down to the forces of oppression that have no spiritual or legal authority to work over and against us. We know that our cause is righteous and that our cause is going to help liberate this entire country. So let's stay with it. I want to thank you for your time, ladies and gentlemen.
You're listening to Inaugurate the Resistance on Other Voices, Other Choices. That was Native American activist Chase Iron Eyes. Next up is Brian Colores, a national organizer for Movement for the 99%.
What we've seen today and this weekend is only the tip of the iceberg. 500,000 people in Washington, D.C., 500,000 people in Los Angeles, I got the report. Rallies all around the country, all around the world, in South Africa, in India, 250,000 people marching in London against Trump. This is only the tip of the iceberg. I want to mention as well, socialist students with walkouts at over 40 campuses across the country yesterday, because young people historically have been at the forefront of revolutionary events. And it's not just young people historically, it's this generation. Occupy Wall Street, Black Lives Matter, the 15 struggle. Bernie Sanders' campaign was overwhelmingly a youth movement. And there's a coming new women's liberation movement and new immigrant resistance that, again, young people will be at the forefront of. And this will only continue and intensify. Not just because young people are historically at the front of struggle, but because of what this generation faces. Low-wage jobs, student debt, environmental destruction on a scale never seen before. One of the first generations to ever do worse economically than their parents. But people don't just radicalize and move into action when things are bad for them. It's also that this generation's hopes were raised. What were we told when Obama got elected? That we lived in a post-racial society. What has happened? The gunning down of black folks every day in this country by the police or by right-wing vigilantes. We were told also that Hillary's campaign was going to end sexism. And what do we have as a result of this election? We have a political establishment that's paved the way for a president who glorifies sexual assault and promises to overturn Roe v. Wade. I think one thing that's important about what socialist students did Friday and the actions that were taken was that these walkouts were disruptive. They confronted business as usual. I'm all for the types of marches that happened around the country today, where we all gather together with a permit and we march from point A to point B with a unified message. But also, that's just part of what needs to happen. We need to disrupt. We need to block highways. We need to shut down schools. We need to shut down corporate profits. Business as usual is what got us here, right? Trying to rely on a milquetoast leadership of the Democratic Party to stop virulent racist right-wing populism did not stop virulent racist right-wing populism. The establishment that's devalued life of people of color for so long that could pave the way for this rhetoric of Trump. It's the establishment that's propped up bullies of occupying armies in the streets that has now gotten a bully in charge of this country. It's an establishment that's told us for so long that billionaires know best for us that now has put a demagogic billionaire into office. They paved the road for him, and that's why I think to fight right-wing populism, we can't rely on the Democratic Party. We need a new party for working-class people. I think we need a new party to fight Trump, because it's precisely that Democratic Party leadership that he points to whip up his base, to mislead people down this reactionary road. And I think to not only win those people over, but to fight effectively against that rhetoric, right, we need a new force. But right now, what do people see who are afraid of Trump's agenda on TV about what the mainstream Democrats are saying to them? They say Hillary Clinton at Trump's inauguration. They see Obama meeting with him to try and give him advice on how to rule better in order to deport immigrants, because Obama knows something about that, right? And that's why we need to be able to present something that speaks clearly for working class people and does not try to serve two masters and refuses to take a dime in corporate cash. Woo-hoo! We can't depend dependent on the establishment, we need to mobilize from below with determined action. The fight against defunding Planned Parenthood, the fight against overturning Roe v. Wade, cannot just be left to the women's movement. It needs to be a fight of all of us that are opposing Trump's agenda. I think March 8th should be a flashpoint of determined resistance, but also May Day we should look to. In 2006, there was a day without an immigrant that shut down the port in Los Angeles, that shut down cities across the country. But the problem was that the labor movement as a whole did not back up those immigrants and also take strike action, also take determined action. And I think this time around, May Day cannot just be a day without an immigrant, but it needs to be met with the slogan, an injury to one is an injury to all, and all of us that oppose Trump's agenda need to stop every single deportation and need to get behind every immigrant organization and working class movement on May Day this year. It hasn't been talked about enough, but it's not just women, LGBT people, it's not just immigrants that are on the chopping block with the Trump agenda. The labor movement itself is going to face a slow chipping away from the Trump administration that eventually wants to lead to right to work, which we call right to work for less, which essentially means the destruction of the labor movement as we know it. That is on the agenda for Trump's administration. But the unfortunate situation is that most of the labor leaders are already preparing as if this right-to-work legislation has already passed. They're laying off organizers across the country. They're preparing for the loss of dues that would come from right-to-work. Instead of that, there needs to be a preparation to resist, a preparation to educate, a preparation to defy. The labor movement in this country has the power to shut down major metropolitan areas, has the power to shut down infrastructure, and that's what should be viably threatened when right to work is put on the agenda. We can make Trump's agenda crumble. It won't be easy. Chris outlined the forces we're up against, but we can. We can go on the offense and win. This won't be easy because of what our enemy has. And just mocking Trump, or certainly mocking his supporters, is not going to get it done. And that's why I think an independent political force along with these movements is absolutely necessary. But we also should see the possibility for a successful fight back. The establishment is divided in a way that I haven't seen since I've been an activist for 20 years. The two main repressive forces in the world, the CIA and the FBI, one took out Clinton and the other's trying to take out Trump, right? The establishment is divided, and as Chase said, we need unity. We can't leave the women's organizations alone to fight for reproductive rights. We can't leave the immigrant organizations alone to fight to end deportations, and the same goes for all the other struggles. We need maximum unity. For those of us in this room, that means also you've got to be welcoming to people who aren't as woke as you, right? I think we need disruptive, determined action. But if you just break windows at a Starbucks with no message about what exactly you're fighting for, if you just use big academic words that won't welcome people, right, that's not the type of determined action that's going to bring folks in. We're going to need to do determined action. We need to unite and build actions together. But also folks who've never been to a demonstration before, right? They're coming to their first thing because their neighbor might get deported or because they're just afraid for what could go on in their community. And we're going to need to fight to bring those people into the movement to have that debate and discussion about the tactics that are necessary to win. But in that situation, we need to be able to draw a line. If we're going to unite with people in movements who want to support the Democrats, or maybe who are former Trump supporters, right? Or say a whole bunch of things we don't agree with, we need to be able to draw a line at a place that also makes the movement effective. And not subordinate the needs of our struggles against Trump, the needs of the struggles of immigrants or women against Trump, to what the Democratic Party finds acceptable. I think there are ways to do this. One is with concrete demands. If March 8th was to start with the concrete demand of defend and extend reproductive rights, Connecting that to other needs working class people have, I think that would be a huge step forward. If on May 1st we demand no deportations and full legalization for all immigrant workers, I think that would be a huge step forward and a huge call that everyone could unite around. And we also not just need clear demands, but we need actions that can win these things. And I think that includes electoral action, as Shum has shown in Seattle, outside the Democratic Party. Yeah. Along with that, we need patient explanation to people who aren't there with us yet. But we should make no mistake about our difficult and complicated tasks. We can win. Trump has talked about the agenda for his first 100 days. Our first 100 days should be an agenda of escalating resistance with flashpoints on March 8th, International Women's Day, and on May 1st, May Day, of determined resistance and disruption of business as usual. We need to center our actions on mobilizing people from below, on the power of the working class, on demands that resonate with people, but also reach beyond what capitalism and their two parties want to give us. We can win against Trump and his whole billionaire class, and that includes being bold. Right now, some folks might have been anti-capitalist for a while and you're used to sort of not saying it much. Right now, young people are joining socialist organizations and subscribing to socialist publications by the thousands and tens of thousands. Let's be bold about what we stand for. The Trump victory may have dealt us lemons, but we can make a cocktail of resistance, revolt, radicalization, and revolutionary politics. We should all get organized, join, and build the struggle against capitalism.
That was Brian Koloris, a national organizer for the Movement for the 99%. He spoke at Inaugurate the Resistance, an event held in Washington, D.C. on January 21, 2017, one day after the inauguration of Donald Trump. We also heard from Chris Hedges, Shama Sawant, and Chase Iron Eyes. The event was part of Occupy Inauguration's Weekend of Resistance, sponsored by the Green Party, Socialist Alternative, Occupy Wall Street, Movement for the 99%, and the Stein-Baraka campaign. This is episode 2 of the Other Voices, Other Choices series. You can find a video of this event at othervoicesotherchoices.com and at the YouTube channel of the same name. I'm Wilton Vaught, host of the series. Thanks for listening, and remember, never believe anything until you hear the official denial.